And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
Welcome to Rates and Barrels. It is Wednesday, March 27th. Derek Van Riper, Eno Saris here with you in the middle of the week because we weren't here with you on Monday. If you're watching us on YouTube, be sure to smash that like button, subscribe to our channel, leave us a nice rating and review wherever you listen to this podcast, and send Eno some allergy medicine because he looks a little roughed up today.
Oak trees, dude. Oak trees are the worst. You know what their leaves are like?
Yeah.
Pain. And then they have that pollen. Oh, oak trees are the worst. If we have an oak tree ranking at the bottom of the list, a tree ranking, I'm putting oak trees at the bottom.
Wow. All right. Tree rankings for early April when we're waiting for more sample for baseball.
Right. That's our week one filler piece.
Week one, last 10 minutes of an episode, tree rankings. Start weighing in on Discord immediately with any insight you have about trees because they're great. I don't think a lot about them. Maybe I should.
Eucalyptus is a problem around here because they're invasive and they're not from here and they get top heavy and then they're not used to the winds and they topple over. Also at the bottom of my list.
I have helped clean up eucalyptus on a bike path in the name of science Northern California. So I fully understand that particular problem. But yes, tree rankings next week. Got something to look forward to.
We have too much to do today. Shut up, you know.
Yeah, we actually have stuff on the rundown today. Stop ruining it. Yeah. We have a signing. Jordan Montgomery has signed with the Diamondbacks 1 year, $25 million. Couldn't most of the league have found that for Jordan Montgomery, given that most of the league has a need for innings in their starting rotations?
And with all the injuries we've had this spring, you'd think that somebody would be looking. The Yankees are out here running out Clark Schmidt and Luis Gil decided to pass on this situation. So, I know it's always about payroll. It's always about the luxury tax and so on and so forth. But Arizona is spending some of that World Series cash. I think with Jordan Montgomery in it, they're only up to $167 million this year. It's nice to have a clean balance sheet, I guess. It's a little funny to sort of chase money after money, though, right? You signed Eduardo Rodriguez. He goes down. You sign someone for more. but Eduardo Rodriguez is signed for longer. This will end up being, I think, a two-year deal. He vests into the player option. He vests into a player option after 10 starts. So if he makes 10 starts, it can be a two-year $50 deal. It's a player option, not a team option. So he can join the market again if he likes.
So now that he has a team, and now that he ended up in a place that's not a hitter-friendly environment, I imagine for the remaining drafts, Wednesday, Thursday, throughout the weekend, Montgomery jumps up a little bit in terms of where he goes. How much do you trust his skills at this point? I mean, we've had a two-year window where the ratios have been very good, but the strikeout rate has been down a tick from where it was during his time with the Yankees, right? We saw 24%+ K rates from him a little earlier in his career. Now he seems to have settled in kind of in that 21-22% range.
Yeah, I have a hard time pushing him too much. We've got a 4+ ERA projection on him using Stuff Plus, and then we've got a 20.5 strikeout rate projection, which I guess would be one of his lowest of his career, but also is just commensurate with the kind of stuff he has, I think. And he's never been a big strikeout rate guy. So that's why the market didn't really want to take the plunge for a long contract, despite his good ERAs the last 3 years. It's a stuff plus league right now, and he was on the wrong side of that. I think the Arizona did well to get a short deal that they didn't, like, $25 million is not actually, that's pushing the AAV, but it's not pushing it a lot. It's not one of these Max Scherzer deals where it's, you know, what, like 2 and 60 or whatever crazy deal he signed at one point with the Mets. So I think it's a decent deal. I just nudged him up from the low 40s to the, I mean, from the high 40s to the low 40s. So I think, you know, my would you rather is Jordan Montgomery or Aaron Civale?
Aaron Civale.
See, I have him right behind Aaron Civale still. But how about this? The next one is, you say Kikuchi.
Jordan Montgomery, but
see,
yeah, but that's the part of the draft where with any of those three, you might choose one over the other for different reasons, where you might say, I'm worried about Savali's health history. I want some innings with good ratios. Uh-huh. I'm going Montgomery. I want the guy that brings me the most possible ceiling. That's Kikuchi, but he also brings the most downside, right? So it is a little bit of a fork, or to use the tree analogy, you got a few branches here, so you got to choose which way you want to go. But in a vacuum,
it might have something to do with what you did earlier. Yeah.
But in a vacuum, Savali's the one I'd rather have, not thinking about the rest of the build. But it's, again, not by a lot, because I do trust the ratios. I do trust the park, and the team context is good. Maybe we have some questions again about the Arizona bullpen for the reasons we talked about yesterday. You know, losing Paul Sewald makes them one thinner. That could hurt the starters a little bit just in terms of protecting their leads and helping them pile up wins. But Jordan Montgomery goes from the World Series winners to the World Series runner-ups at a very, very fair one-year deal that no one would have predicted all the way back in the start of the winter. We have an update on Matt McClain. He had shoulder surgery. It's not good. Yeah, cartilage damage. And a labrum repair.
Labrum repair is bad.
In the left shoulder. Yep. It's the lead shoulder for him.
Even if he comes back this year, I can't imagine the power's there.
It's hard to rely on that. And I think in situations where you have limited IL spots or no IL spots, this is probably not a player you're going to hold. If you do have limited IL spots, you hold them until you can't. But the timetable's so far into the future, it's late second half, most likely. I mean, I think Logan Ohapi had this last year, suffered it kind of early in the year.
He came back for like 50 plate appearances or something.
Came back and was productive. Like, that's almost, to me, like the performance part of that's the outlier, right? So yeah, you're looking at several months before Matt McClain is back, and the stability that this unfortunately provides Jonathan India. Like, unfortunate for McClain, fortunate for India.
Well, he did manage 199 plate appearances, Ohapi did. But yes, I mean, that coming back with that amount of power after that injury, I agree.
Really frustrating. But Jonathan India probably moving up boards even more. And I think it's easy to lose sight of this. India last year went 14 for 16 on the base paths in just 119 games. So there could be 20 steals with a full season of health and a full season of playing time. And now there's the increased probability of that actually happening because of McClain's absence and the long suspension for Noel V. Marte.
Oh, man, it's crazy. That Santiago Espinal deal that didn't make much sense at the time makes a lot more sense now. They actually need Santiago Espinal to paper over some of their issues, especially since they let Jose Barrero go. Where did Barrero go? Jose Barrero ended up
Texas.
On the Rangers. Yeah. He made the team, too. But Espinal takes over for Barrero and gets, I don't know, 300 plate appearances maybe this year.
Hey, you want a deep, deep sleeper? Jose Barrero getting a fresh start in a new organization with Donnie Ecker and a group of coaches that had a lot of success in Texas last year? I'm intrigued. Barrero wasn't bad at AAA. He was 25, but 19 homers, 20 steals, and 21 attempts in 80 games? Okay. Could be a late bloomer. It's possible.
I tend to think he's a help at shortstop, but Seager ended up making the opening day roster. So I don't know exactly what Barrera will do.
I think it's more of just depth at this point, not necessarily someone you're relying on outside of very deep AL-only leagues. But for your last reserve pick in your AL-only league that hasn't happened yet, consider Jose Barrero.
Weights and barrels all over that last reserve pick in your AL only.
We helped even five people with that advice. I feel like our job here is done. We have some news on Dylan Carlson, a follow-up that he is going to begin the season on the IL. So Victor Scott is headed to St. Louis, and I saw a lot of chatter around Discord, around Twitter, wondering if Victor Scott is actually Esteri Ruiz 2.0 in terms of being this kind of speed-heavy player that might not hit the ball hard enough. So this is a little more of a broad question, but feel free to take it any direction you want. How do you look at players like this, the speedsters that have some power in the minor leagues, and how do you discern which of those players has enough power to actually carry that against top-level pitching? Because what happens a lot of times is premium velocity, something these guys don't see enough of in the minor leagues, is a normalcy once they get to the big leagues, and the power falls off a cliff, even though you see productive power seasons at multiple minor league stops. And Esteri Ruiz, as an example, 2021, in 84 games at AA, popped 10 homers. Like, that's pretty good. You'd think 15-plus homers in the big leagues someday would be possible. But then you get to the big leagues, you get to see some more hard hit data, you get to see barrel rates, get a better sense for how guys pitch them, and you realize, okay, you know, those home runs happened, but the way those home runs happen make them unlikely to unfold at the highest level. So do you have any of those concerns about Scott, and what kind of steers you in the direction of believing in a player's power when they have a profile like this?
Well, I have a two-part answer. One is that specifically with Scott, I am flying blind a little bit. It's a little bit based on discussions I've had with him that make me think he has some nascent power in there. I would much rather he had played at AAA so that I could get a max EV number, if not a barrel number. We don't have that with Scott. So I would say I don't know with Scott. I think he's not Ruiz, but it's certainly possible. One thing that I can look at is ground ball rates. Scott had a 48 in high A, but he only had a 40% in A and double A. So that's a little bit of a proxy for power. Is at least he wasn't hitting the ball 50 or 60% on the ground. So that's good news. The second part of my answer is that I think he's not Ruiz because of totally different reasons that have nothing to do with power. And that is swinging strike rate. And the one kind of problem that I have with Ruiz is that he's always had way higher strikeout and swinging strike rates than I want out of this kind of player. And so when he last year struck out 20% of the time, that doesn't seem like a big deal. That's still better than average. But for this kind of profile, it's not good enough. This kind of profile, if you don't have the power, you need to make a ton of contact, put everything into play. Think of Luis Arraez type. You need to be kind of that guy where you're just putting a bunch of singles in play and then all of a sudden you're on second. And 20% with a 12% swing strike rate is not it for Ruiz. Scott came up with lower strikeout rates and lower swing strike rates, not by a huge margin, but by enough where it might actually make a difference. And so what you want Scott to do if he doesn't have power is what he did this spring, is a 404 OBP, a 15% strikeout rate, 380 BABIP might sound high, but you know, what about a 340 BABIP? Then he hits 270 with a 360 OBP. He's still a top of the lineup guy, even without the power. So my answer is I'm guessing on the power. That's just something where you can look at scout grades. He only has 30 power according to Fangraphs, so that's a defensible position. The other part of the answer is what do you do outside of the power that could make you good enough to succeed without power? And that's a fine line. There's very few people that do it.
It's stepping outside of the offensive profile. The defense matters in a big way. Victor Scott projects to be a well above average defensive center fielder, and Esteri Ruiz does not.
Yeah, he's already being platooned and already being moved off center. So that's part of my second answer, which is like, you know, the other things other than power that make Scott a better player.
I'll turn to the scouting grades from Eric Longenhagen and the great team over at Fangraphs here again for a second, too. It's interesting that they had a 35 hit tool on Esteri Ruiz when he graduated, 40 game power and 50 raw. Scott has 45 present hit tool with 50 future, 30 game power, present and future, 30 raw power. So the concerns about the power
are
real.
70 field. What's the
70 field, 80 speed. And then the hit tool difference. I think the hit tool difference is really, really big. The gap between a 35 and a 45 is like a lot bigger than you realize. So when you pair that with the fielding defense, it might look like the same categorical contributions from a roto perspective, but I think the real life implications might be such that Victor Scott is also better because he draws more walks and the OBP stays higher and maybe he can be more of a table setter. So yes, the concerns about the power are legit, but they are different players because of other aspects of their profiles.
Yeah, and I don't know why, man. I think he's going to develop some power.
I just want to be decimated by another Victor. I'm ready to move
Victor
on.
Victor part two.
Victor 2.0. That's what I'm ready for. And so the one-liner, the prospects TLDR line and Victor Scott. Infielders beware. Scott is a bunt-inclined speedster and potential gold glove center fielder. When you say bunt-inclined speedster, I think of Victor Robles.
That's right. He used to bunt all the time.
I think about my exes.
I think about my exes in Texas.
It's a bad place to be.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
So let's talk about some spring stats that we believe in, because we're kind of bumping into this topic a little bit anyway. And this goes back to Jason Collette at First Pitch Arizona. If you missed the episode where we previously talked about this, he looked at spring training stolen base attempts last year to try and get a better sense for how much more the league it was going to run. And based on how much teams were running in the Grapefruit League and in the Cactus League, he actually ended up with a really solid projection for what was going to happen in the regular season. So knowing that we have this kind of significant indicator of how much teams want to run.
He was almost like plus 40%, and then it was plus 40%.
It was really, really close once he ran the calculations. And it's leading us to say, okay, stolen bases in spring training probably matter in terms of team intent, because teams are testing that out, trying to see who's effective at running, who's not. Trying to see if they can get an edge in that area. You put together a table with some leaders, team leaders in spring stolen bases, and there were a few surprising teams on here. The Angels lead the league, both leagues, with 30 steals this spring. New manager, Ron Washington. Not a lot of new personnel, though, right? Like, it's kind of the same cast of characters, less Shohei Ohtani, as far as who is actually stealing bases for this Angels team.
Yeah, there's a little bit of a wrinkle there where Jake Mariznick is one of the leaders, and it says here that he will begin the season at AAA Salt Lake. So the personnel does matter to some extent, but not fully. You know what I mean? Like, just because Mariznick won't be on the Angels doesn't mean that they aren't going to take off. It's the reason that this is sticky, I think, is it's a managerial decision. You know, it's like a go or don't go. It's like, do you have the green light or not? Do you need to look over and get the sign, or do you feel like you can just do it, you know? And so Mariznick or no, I think the angels are going to take off. Adele is actually kind of a funky sleeper out of this, which is that I think, you know, Adele at this point is out of options. He's got nowhere to go. And the team is sort of desperate for any kind of star power, any kind of young possible star power. And with Mickey Moniak having the worst plate discipline and plate skills in baseball, like almost literally, Adele, even though he has some of the worst contact rates in baseball, could sneak into this team. I mean, this is a team that has Aaron Hicks lined up at DH. He's going to steal bases. He's a kind of AL-only type sleeper, I think. Adele is only really a keeper in AL, only like only type sleeper himself. But if he steals a couple bases in the first week and he's playing every day or playing close to every day, I would keep a close eye on him. If you're in a punt batting average situation, he's a perfect player for that. Six stolen bases this spring. If you just totally change his stolen base projections, he projects in half a season to go 15-15. So if they just decide finally just to give him a full-time role, and yeah, he might hit 230 and have a 300 OBP, but he could go 30-30 as one of the ugliest 30-30 seasons in the history of baseball. It would be fun, and it's made possible or probable by this sort of quirk of Ron Washington being the leader there. You got a new manager in Milwaukee who seems to want to run wild. I think that's meaningful for Jackson Churio. Churio's got these sort of, he's a rookie projections, right? Well, Churio's power is the question mark, not necessarily his ability to get on base, hit for batting average, or steal bases. What if he steals 30? You know, the Brewers are second on that list. Lane Thomas leads the Nationals. We all think of Lane Thomas as a guy who will steal 15 or whatever. Maybe not. Maybe it's 40. And across spring training, this is from Jason Collette himself, across spring training last year, they were 2.18 stolen base attempts per game. This year, 2.24. So generally, there's going to be inflation across the board. And I'm not sure how it'll play out again, but I think you will see some surprising guys. The one question I have that I always have is like, what will happen at the very top? You know, we had Acuna going for 70, but we had nobody else going over 60. Would we have a guy go to 100, or is it just going to be a lot more 30s and 20s? And I think that's sort of what happened last year. So I would predict more 20s and 30s. So Churio, instead of the 15 or 18, gets to 25, 30. And Lane Thomas gets to 30, you know, and maybe Adele gets to 20 plus. So those are the takeaways that I have from the spring leaders in that department.
Yeah, I was looking back at some of the angels on an individual level. Zach Neto's 4-for-5 as a base stealer this spring in 22 games. He was 5-for-6 in 84 games last year. He's seemingly going to run a lot more. So if you add
that toggle,
yeah, you add 10 to 15 more steals to Zach Neto's projection, that would actually do a lot in terms of where he would go.
Now he's 2020 or whatever, yeah.
Suddenly he's more interesting. I think you're kind of right about Adele, at least for super deep leagues. He's 6-for-6 this spring. They showed last year they were willing to be very patient and tolerant of Mickey Moniak's swing and miss. Given that Adele is out of options, I think they're going to give him at least a handful of opportunities to break through as a part-time player, still more of a really, really deep league consideration. They even had Brandon Drury running this spring. He was 0-for-2 last season at 125 games. He's 0-for-2 again this spring, but it is like everybody is getting chances to do that. I was wondering, is Mike Trout trying to steal some bases this spring? Even Trout's got one. Don't think Trout's going to go back to early career 20, 30 steal seasons again, but he might be more than one or two. You might be 5 or 10, which is kind of nice if you're expecting zero and you get that little bit of a bonus. So yeah, it looks like a clear organizational philosophy there. I would look at a player like Sal Frelick with the Brewers and say,
yeah,
not only if you read coverage about the team, you get a sense that Sal Frelick is Pat Murphy's kind of guy. They have a pretty high level of trust in his athleticism anyway, moving him from the outfield to the dirt. And then
now back to center
field, and then probably back to the dirt again later this year at third base, which is kind of remarkable. So I look at that and say, okay, like, this is a guy that fits what they're trying to do. And he's attempted 7 stolen bases in 17 games this spring. He's 4-for-7. But his minor league success rates, his speed, those things, and his OBP all point to him being a guy that could actually steal a lot of bases. And projections are modest. 13 to 16 steals is what you're going to see. So I'd be surprised maybe if Frelick 20, didn't top 25. That. Yeah, I think that's the more likely expectation for a player like that. I saw the Guardians and Nationals popping on that list. Then, you know, the Nats, not much has changed there just as far as Davey Martinez being a holdover manager. But the Guardians, I feel like they're a team that we almost never talk about. And usually it's kind of poking them in the ribs for being frugal and saying, hey, you can try. But Stephen Vogt is a new manager, right? They have a new staff.
And how do you goose a low power, high contact offense?
Run.
Get him on first, get him to second. Andrés Giménez has 6 stolen bases this spring. And he's third on the overall list. So, you know, if you bought him for 30 steals, I think you should feel pretty good about that. And he could be a candidate for that 45-50 level.
Right, right. And something that's happened throughout this draft season, we've talked about CJ Abrams a bunch of times and the early, like, third, fourth round ADP he carries and saying, okay, like, there's a lot of ways for him to even still move up in value if he keeps getting better as a hitter. But there are players like him who were slightly below average by WRC plus that have some power and have a lot of speed. They could put up similar numbers at a lower price. Andrés Giménez is part of the reason why I was so reluctant to build around CJ Abrams throughout draft season, because I see a similar floor, but I also see a similar ceiling too, because we're still talking about a guy in Giménez who's 25. Like, there's a very good chance we haven't seen his absolute best season yet. And that might just be a combination of, you know, higher mid-teens power that we saw in 2022, a better average in OBP like we saw that year, with the added speed from the new rules. That might be what that career year actually looks like. I'm happy to get that at a discount. So if you're in the wait a little bit for your speed group, the way that I've been throughout this draft season, Andrés Giménez is someone that might fit really, really well where he's going. And it's nice to see the Guardians kind of maxing out those green lights this spring.
We've got Blue Jays down table. They're not in the top 5, but I think they're 6th. So, you know, they look like they're running. It is funny, though. One player can change the math on this. Dalton Varsho leads the entire spring training with 8 stolen bases. The Blue Jays have 18 this spring. So it's 8 for Varsho and 10 for the rest of the team. I don't see another Toronto guy in the top 25. So it could just be Varsho and Varsho alone that's driving that train. But that's a team, I don't know, it's not really a managerial change so much as, you know, it's a team that didn't score as much as they wanted to last year. It's a player that didn't play as well as he wanted to last year. It seems to be kind of a pairing of needs where Varsho is probably going to run a little bit more this year. And just overall, I think he's a guy I'd like, you know. And if you change his projections to 25-20, which is only giving him 4 stolen bases on a lot of these projections, then his 240 average that he's projected for, 230, 240, becomes a lot more palatable. Is that the right way to say it?
Palatable? I've always said palatable.
Palatable.
But I've heard you and Britt say palatable, and now I'm really not sure.
It's an earworm thing. I saw a commercial for tinnitus. And I was like, that's tinnitus. What are you talking about?
But tinnitus? Is that like a, I don't even know what,
like,
kind of.
Like the ringing of the ear?
Oh.
It's tinnitus.
I always thought it was tinnitus.
It's tinnitus, I guess. Anyway.
Clearly we didn't go to medical school.
Palatable. Yeah, right. I'm Dr. Nick.
Did we pass classes in English and linguistics?
I don't know what else is, like, super meaningful for me in spring. We've talked a lot about plate appearances, but that can even be a little bit misleading. Willier Abreu leads the entire spring training with 77 plate appearances. As currently constructed, I see Sedan Rafaela playing center and Jaron Duran playing a corner, Yoshida playing DH, and O'Neill playing a corner. So if Abreu makes that team, he didn't have a great spring. And if he makes that team, I feel like it's in a part-time role. So maybe it was, there's that, like, wanting to see more of the guy, you know, to make a decision versus he's making the team. So second is Wyatt Langford with 71 plate appearances. That's absolutely meaningful because he didn't go down. He didn't go anywhere. They gave him plate appearances as many as they could every day. Sedan Rafaela is third. So generally, I think plate appearances matter. Guys that stick out in that are high in plate appearances, Sal Frelick, second mention. I don't know why Alexander Canario is eighth in plate appearances. That means something more than I know what to do with it.
He was a late roster cut for them, though. Like, they were trying to get a long look, I think, to decide if he belonged as a backup outfielder right away or if he needed a little more time as an everyday player.
Yeah, so I guess that's a, you know, you got the, like, want to take a look to make a decision versus giving him all the, like, Jackson Turio is fifth, and I absolutely saw that coming a mile away, plus the contract, and so I have some shares of Turio in redrafts where I thought, this guy's going to play. Here's a name for you. 12th overall in plate appearances is a Mr. Lawrence Butler. And, you know, the outfield in Oakland has been playing really well. J.J. Bleday has great spring numbers. I'm not going to tell you to draft him based on his batting average, et cetera. But Lawrence Butler's playing time comes with a reduced strikeout rate, which would change his upside immensely. That's been the one question about what he has. He has above average power. He has above average speed. He has above average defense. It looks like he might even have above average ability to get on base. So you're adding a lot of above averages together. If you add in above average strikeout rate, and strikeout rate is something that I will look at in spring, just because if you had 62 major league plate appearances in the early goings of a 12% strikeout rate from Lawrence Butler, you would take notice. You know, so I know it's not always, it's against uneven competition in the spring, but it still matters somewhat. So if Lawrence Butler this year strikes out 23% of the time, you can change his projection to like a 245, 250 average. That's a guy who can hit 250, hit you 15 to 18 homers and steal you 20 bags. Do you want that?
Well, yeah. And I think Butler has more intriguing tools that matter to a major league team more than Esteury Ruiz. So if the who do you play against righties question comes up with those two guys, if Ruiz is a corner guy and not a center fielder, he's competing more with Butler in the long run for time. I would give that opportunity.
Bleday's been playing center. That's another thing I look at in spring is where they're playing. Bleday's been playing center. Fangraphs is on this. They move Bleday to center 61% of the time. Butler backing him up, Butler backing Seth Brown up, Butler backing Brent Rooker up, Butler backing Esteury Ruiz up. So he's everywhere on this depth chart, and it's just not quite enough. But once you pair it with the spring trade appearances, you start to think, okay, he's at least going to play every day that Ruiz sits, you know, and he might start taking away plate appearances from Brown and Rooker, because Brown and Rooker, or at least Brown has soft skills for future. You don't bet on a guy like Brown. I'm not trying to be mean, you know, but like
he's 31. Like that's
strikes out a lot, you know. His career OBP is 295. You know what I mean? It's like he's a guy you have for a while, and if someone else starts playing better than him, so be it.
Yeah. Butler is very interesting, though. And he really, last year, took that step forward with the K rate while moving up to AA and AAA. I think that sort of was a good lead up into what he's done this spring. It's a continuation that we're seeing right now. I think that's what makes him so exciting. And even if there were some warts in his first run against big league pitching, with the K rate jumping, the walk rate falling, he didn't have a ridiculously high chase rate. He made a decent amount of hard contact. 37% hard hit rate's fine for a player that young in his debut. There was more good than bad in the underlying numbers for Butler, too. So, really interesting guy that, if he wasn't drafted, might start popping up on early season waiver wire columns if the playing time is actually there the way we expect it to be, given where they're at in their rebuild. I mean, it totally makes sense. The other thing you put together was a spring leaderboard of rotation K minus BB, I believe is what you told me this was.
Yeah. It's not. I just wanted to point out that, like, you know, the Marlins player development, pitching player development is not just about the park. You know, we've seen some real good advances from Weathers. Myers is coming back. They turn out guys, and they turn out guys who are good in other places too. So it's not, you know, Pablo Lopez wasn't just the park, you know, turns out. And so this is pretty eye-popping. The Marlins have a 31.6% strikeout rate and a 5.7% walk rate from their starters this spring. And this isn't even the A squad. You know what I mean? Half their pitchers are hurt. So I wanted to point that out. I also want to point out that the Tigers are second with a 29.7% strikeout rate and an 8.7% walk rate. The Tigers, that includes Matt Manning, who got sent down. I talked about this on the shares episode yesterday. I have too many shares of Matt Manning. That's a little sad for me. They got sent out. He's still going to be worth 100 innings this year. My draft and holds, my keeper leagues, I'm not that sad about him. I'm going to keep him around. But then you said the Mariners, not too surprising. The Mets, who have been really trying to turn their player development around. That's some Tyler Megill, but 27% strikeout rate, 6.5% walk rate from their starters this spring. Not too bad, not too shabby. All those guys ahead of the Dodgers. So just wanted to point out that there might be some remnants or some artifacts of player development that show in this, because this is irrespective of the actual players. This is just a grouping of the teams and their starters, right? And so there's going to be some rookies in here. There's going to be some 6 and 7 starters in here. But it is maybe a peek into the teams that are good at developing pitchers, right? I mean, this is what you want to do. You want to have good K-minus BB. And so the Red Sox are on that list. They are on my bold predictions, which are up right now. We'll talk a little bit more about those tomorrow, though.
Yeah, we will save that. Interesting to see Nick Pivetta, 22-4, KWB, Garrett Whitlock, 22-3, Cutter Crawford, 18-2, Cooper Criswell, maybe a really, really deep league option, 17-3, Tanner Houck, 16-3. Yeah, those are good performances kind of across the board with a group of pitchers that a lot of people are skeptical of as the season approaches. So
one thing that happens with a change in regime is not only people tend to think of like pitch shape and sort of player development in that way, but you can't forget about game day prep and strategy. For example, and this is from my bold predictions column, but it's just a little bit, so I feel like I can show a little leg. Brian Bello has thrown 1 4-seam this spring. He had a 6.07 slugging allowed on the 4-seam last year.
That's right. We talked about how ineffective that pitch was.
So sometimes it's just a fresh set of eyes that say, hey, that pitch that gets banked, don't throw it. Let's try something else. So, you know, and then there's some return to health, I think, in Whitlock and Houck a little bit. And so, you know, that's a rotation. But the Tigers and the Tigers, who were second on that list, and the Red Sox, who were 10th, both made my bold predictions columns because they both seem to be doing something right in pitching player development. It's been turning things around recently. You know, like, I don't think the Tigers at first, you know, seemed like maybe they were a mess there. But I think Fetter, their pitching coach there, has been really good, and they seem to have a good process now.
Yeah, there were some rumblings that Fetter was a good long-term fit even a couple seasons ago, but now they've got more personnel. They have a few veterans, you know, having a guy like Jack Flaherty be putting some things together this spring. He's their leader in strikeouts, 26-4 KWB in 18 1/3 innings so far for Flaherty. If you weren't necessarily a believer in November, are you a believer now?
How much you move a guy like based on his pitching coach, like you can get into trouble that way, dude. Seriously.
Well, you're moving him based more on velo and different characteristics of his pitches changing, right? Like it's not just the, well, Chris Fetter's there. People used to do this with Ray Searidge in Pittsburgh. Oh, Ray Searidge has the pitching whisperer is not really a thing. It's what are they doing and why does it work? Like, ask more questions. Like, use that as a, let's see, is the game plan different? Is something better in terms of velo? Something better in terms of movement? Does this guy have a new weapon that he's using against lefties? Or whatever the previous flaw was, has it actually been corrected? It's not just Chris Fetter, I trust Jack Flaherty. It's Jack Flaherty's doing these things, and now I'm interested in at least streaming him at home, right? Because the park does give you a really steady floor.
I just moved him, due to this conversation, I moved him above the injured players.
I cleared the injury glob.
And he's now joined the converted reliever blob. So he's up to around 81 now. With a bullet.
And my rankings 2.0 idea of at a certain point on your rankings list, it's more just grouping like players together and saying, what do you need? Do you need to take a shot at a converted reliever? Or do you need to take a chance at an old guy that has rebuilt his
pitch
mix? Do
you have IL slots? I mean, that's something I hope that people know when they look at my rankings. I put all the IL guys together in little groupings. And if you just want to motor past that with your eyes, then do it. Because I have to try and rank for every team. You know, for every different setting. And so there are definitely places. I have unlimited ILs. I took Jacob deGrom, Justin Verlander, Gavin Williams, and Brian Wu all in one draft last night because I have a bunch of IL slots. And it's like, it's a keeper league. Those are good pitchers. And I'll figure something else out in the short term. You know?
I should have thought more about that in mixed labor where we had an early draft and you have IL spots like that. You could take a very injured pitching staff. And then say, well, there's going to be a lot of time before the season starts, and I'm going to spend a lot of my fab replacing these guys, and I'm probably going to find some early season players.
And all the helium guys like Luis Gil and all those guys, you can be on board for those guys because you'll have slots. Other guys who have a healthy rotation will be like, well, who am I going to drop to pick up Luis Gil? Like, I like my guys, you know?
So yeah, that was...
That's an interesting idea for early drafts with unlimited IL. Think about loading up on injury, actually.
Yeah, more than you ordinarily would. Maybe not building a whole rotation out of it, but at least just saying, hey, I'm going to dedicate three.
This is my squad.
I'm going to take three injured pitchers. Yeah, I have 9 injured pitchers. I'm going to get everyone from the waiver wire. It's like, well, you're going to spend every fab dollar you have by the end of May if you do that. So that's probably not going to work.
The DeGrom.
Oh. I hope for his sake he can come back healthy and give us 3, 4, 5 really good years and
that would be
just sort of erase the what if you could wave a magic wand and make a player healthy.
He's the thing. Number one answer.
Yeah, he from modern pitching, I think he would be that guy.
You know, it was opening day and all these players were coming in with their opening day drip. And I'm never going to look like Ellie De La Cruz and be 6'6" with that body. So I'm not going to pull off that look. But I was really jealous of all these guys with their fitted shirts. I love the way a fitted shirt looks. So I went to Inoshino.com and got my own fitted shirt. And, you know, I got a nice flannel. I wore it to the live podcast that we did in New York and got some compliments on it. You know, what's really cool is you go through this experience where you get to, you know, customize the lapels, the linings, the monograms, the pocket flaps, anything you want. If it's a suit or a shirt, you give them your measurements and you get a shirt that fits you perfectly. It's bespoke without this like big price tag. $89 for fitted shirts. Suits start at $499. Just really high quality stuff. So whether it's opening day and you're at the ballpark and you're trying to interview a ball player, or you just want to look your best this wedding season at the table or on the dance floor, when you wear Indochino, you go to Indochino.com today and use the code RATES to get 10% off of any purchase of $399 or more. That's Indochino.com, promo code RATES.
If you're as obsessed with basketball as I am, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Hey guys, this is JJ Redick. Twice a week, I'm cooking up something special for basketball junkies on my podcast, The Old Man and the Three. I bring on guests in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, like Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, or Paolo Banchero on his shooting workouts with Kevin Durant, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron when they were teammates in Miami. But it's not just about the player interviews. Every Monday, I break down the top 3 things happening around the NBA without the outlandish takes. Often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler, we dive deep into topics like rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is mean mugging now a tech? The Old Man and the Three is the only companion podcast you'll need during the playoffs this year. Be sure to listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
So now we get to the real meat of the rundown. It's the 2024 All Oatmeal Team. This was a request that came in from Eater of Cheeses on Twitter. When we get an idea from a person with a handle that's that good, we have to run with it. That's the rule.
All right. And the way we're going to go with this, I think, is I'm just going to try and guess some. And I'm just going to run through them real quick. And you just tell me if they made your team that you put together.
Right. We'll kind of mush them together for the actual final team. So we'll start behind the plate. I put one catcher on this team. And the ground rules are pretty simple. So if you're kind of playing along as you listen and, or watch, nobody who has a top 100 ADP right now can be on the all oatmeal team. For hitters, we're looking for 1,000 or more career plate appearances. If you're like at 945 or something, that's fine. It doesn't actually disqualify you, but that's generally what we're thinking about. Players that have been in the league have had a couple of full seasons, and we're not looking at them and saying they could get a lot better just because of skills growth. If they get better, it's because of some sort of later career adjustment, maybe moving to a new park, having new hitting coaches. Any of those things are totally fine, but we're not looking at, you know, Ke'Bryan Hayes doesn't count as oatmeal just yet, even though he might qualify by plate appearances. You kind of have to take away the he could get better sheen that a lot of young players have.
Jonah Heim.
Good choice. He was a finalist for me. I think we could probably debate this one. I put Mitch Garver on there. And I think it's because the difference for me between the two is Mitch Garver is an absolute, like, what you see is what you get. A lot of the value for this year comes from not having to really catch anymore. Big Dumper is the main catcher in Seattle. Garver is basically the backup. He's a regular DH. His plate appearances could go through the roof. The park could be a little bit of a challenge for him. I wonder with Jonah Heim if he's actually got one more level. We saw a career best in homers last year. The lineup certainly helped too. The counting stats were great. But man, I think that's a good selection. I think no one's looking at Jonah Heim and saying superstar. So
no one's, yeah, it's like the thing that no one puts the sleeper tag on.
Yeah.
No one's like, Jonah Heim's my sleeper this year.
Yeah. So maybe we'll expand the roster at the end too. The rules are fluid for the all oatmeal team. Who'd you put at first base?
First base. I'm going to go with Ryan Mountcastle.
Ooh, good choice. I like that as a is what he is kind of guy for sure. I put Nathaniel Lowe in this spot.
Oh, that's the other name. They're right next to each other.
Yeah, the reason for me is I think with Nathaniel Lowe, he's a little older than some of the alternatives I considered. I gave an honorable mention to Andrew Vaughn, who has been around a little longer than you think. But
we give up on Nathaniel Lowe, like turning that pull power on and you know, and hitting 30 homers or whatever. Seems like it's not going to happen.
And even though Vaughn's over 1,600 plate appearances now over three big league seasons, I think he's a little bit more like the Ke'Bryan Hayes for me, where I want to give him one more year.
He could still pull it.
right on that borderline.
We're waiting for it.
Also, it's going to be funny if anyone listening comes back in Discord and says, yes, I have 8 players from the all oatmeal names on my rosters, which could work. The deeper the league, the more likely it is that a large combination of players like this end up being good players to have.
Honorable mention to Justin Turner. There's a weird thing that happens with oatmeal, though, when it's super old. First of all, it's not tasty, but
sticks to the bowl.
They actually can become like not like sleepery, but they can become like not well priced, you know. And you know, with Lowe and Mountcastle, they're, you know, they decently go where they're supposed to go. It's just sort of filler for your draft. Turner might actually go too low.
Maybe,
you know,
yeah.
But I think he fits the bill to a certain extent.
Yeah, he could actually be a potential captain of a team like this, because you're looking at a player that's played more than you realize over the last three seasons. His age 36 to 38 seasons. Here are the plate appearances: 612, 532, and 626. He's hit 276 or better in all of those seasons. Had the 1 year where the playing time went down with injury, where he only hit 13 homers, but 23 and 27 homers in two of those seasons too. I think Justin Turner is a much better player at this stage of his career than people give him credit for. So definitely deserves a mention here, because he is very undervalued. Who'd you put over at second base?
I was going to say Ketel Marte, but he's a little bit too good maybe. So I'm going to go with Jorge Polanco.
Yes, we are in complete agreement on Jorge Polanco. Nice. Why'd you put him there?
I just don't think that he's going to hit more homers or steal more bags necessarily. He's not going into a good park to say, oh, this is the year he'll put it all together. He's got some injury concerns that have kept him from playing full seasons. So he's not somebody you're going to grab to help your homers. He's not somebody you're going to grab to help your batting average or your stolen bases. And that's kind of the oatmeal thing too, is like a guy who will advance your team and sort of, you know, not be terrible anywhere, not have a zero. You know, I think this year he could almost put up the average line for in a 15 teamer. The average line you kind of want is, I think, 260 or, you know, 255, 23, 24, and like 6 to 8 stolen bases. And that's like super average. And I think that's kind of what Polanco is going to do.
3 consecutive seasons with a double-digit barrel rate. That power that he's developed over the course of his career looks very real. Love Jorge Polanco, where he has been going. Who'd you put at shortstop? Because there was a name that I put on this team that made me think of you immediately, and it almost made me think that we would have an argument over if he qualifies as oatmeal or not.
Oh, well, that is interesting. I think what's difficult about this position is that if you're a young shortstop, I mean, and even sort of, and I'm being lowercase y here, as in like not like 23 or something. Like if you're just sort of 24 to 28 at shortstop, you're probably a star. You know what I mean? Like they're, you know, the top of I have the leaderboard set, so it's 24 plus, and it's like Seager, Bichette, Lindor, Bogarts, Turner. Like I can't give any of those guys, you know, the oatmeal tag. So I wander a little bit down the list sort of by WRC plus, and I focus on two names. Dansby Swanson's gonna be my name. He doesn't inspire, you know, think pieces. There's not a lot of sleeper lists with him on it. He might be too good for this, and maybe a little bit too young, but I think he's a guy that I look at. There's a couple other names. I'm wondering if you're going to say them, but though.
So I thought Xander Bogaerts qualified as the absolute best player that we could put on the all oatmeal team at this stage of his career.
He's really pushing that. He's pushing that upper end of that of that quality.
And nobody else that I put on my entire team is really pushing it. And I felt like Bogaerts was. So if you want to reject Bogaerts, I'm okay with that because there might still be more there. I gave him the honor of being the captain of the all oatmeal team. So I'm sure he's thrilled.
So he can be the best. I mean, my answer, I think, too, is interesting. What is that on my sleeve? Anyway, my answer, I think Dansby Swanson would be one of the better ones on this team.
Yeah, too, so. Swanson carries a slightly higher ADP than most of these players as well. Mm-hmm. Willy Adames, I guess, could also fit here.
That's the other name I was going to say, yeah.
So maybe it's actually Willy. Maybe that's the true selection. We'll have to hash that one out.
One thing about Willy that's a little bit different from the rest of these guys, though, is a probable batting average flaw.
Yeah.
So he almost belongs in a bucket of players that's like flawed pieces that can fit the right puzzle.
Right.
You know what I mean? I'm not sure that's quite oatmeal.
Eugenio Suarez may be like just past the oatmeal barrier on the wrong side, kind of similar over at third base. And he didn't make the oatmeal team for me. Ryan McMahon actually inspired this question. And I think Ryan McMahon is a perfect answer because not only can you play him at third, you can move him over to second. I don't think he's going to get any better at this stage of his career. I don't think he has any threats to his playing time. I think his skills are pretty solid across the board. He's got the non-zero speed, 3 straight seasons with 20 homers. The batting average could go up a little bit if the K rate comes back down to pre-2023 levels. So I think what you see is what you get, and what you get's not as bad as people make it out to be.
I only have one retort.
Oh.
Jamer Candelario.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. Like he seems to be pretty perfect to me. He's okay. He's like, if you put forth like rate my draft and you literally had the all oatmeal team on your draft, you get no fire emoticons.
That's true. That's really true. I think I left UT open. I thought about Jamer. So I think Jamer is going to slot in as a UT. I think we got to find room for both Jamer and Ryan McMahon. It's nice to have a couple of multi-eligible position players on an oatmeal team, especially.
In the outfield, I have a player that might push that Xander Bogaerts line. I just think that Chaz McCormick is being treated like oatmeal.
Mm.
And so therefore, I do think he's on the upper end. He had a 133 WRC plus last year. But his own manager didn't want to play him every day, so he didn't have those plate appearance totals. And so you're left wondering what his new manager will do and so on and so forth. But he's better than Oatmeal himself, but he seems somewhat to be treated like Oatmeal. I'm going to throw Max Kepler on as like a very obvious Oatmeal. I think he's almost closer to the embodiment of Oatmeal. I don't know if I have a third yet, so I'll let you reveal some while I look.
Oatmeal Hall of Fame candidate, I think, would be Max Kepler.
Max Kepler, yeah. Oh, here was my last one. He's so Oatmeal that he might be a bad pick, and this is one of the few on our list that I'm not sure. Austin Hayes.
Oh, yeah, because
So boring, and his own team has decided that Colton Cowser is more exciting. Austin Hayes may lose time to Colton Cowser this year. And yet he had a 112 WRC plus last year and was an above average major league player. But he is pretty boring, and he's not going to advance you in any of the certain stats other than maybe his batting average is pretty good. But it's not, nothing's great, you know. And so Austin Hayes is on my Oatmeal team.
So my trio starts with probably the second best player I put on the roster, Ian Happ. I think he's in the Oatmeal phase of his career. I never feel bad about drafting him where he goes. I think he fits a lot of builds. Pretty much a good player in every category. Taylor Ward and Alex Verdugo were the other two.
Oh, Taylor Ward is inspired. Oh my God, Taylor Ward. So perfect. Taylor Ward and Max Kepler, dude. Oatmeal co-captains.
Yeah, I think they fit really well. So if you put five on there, we've easily got enough room for everybody. But Hap, Ward, and Verdugo were my selections. And Verdugo, just like Jamer, has the park could actually make him play up a little bit, and you're getting a nice floor anyway, but same guy doing similar things he's done in the past might actually get a better result.
I don't know, at 27, and this new park, I'm just wondering, but you know, you're right.
He's treated like
2,600 plate appearances. So.
In twice traded, right?
Yeah,
so I think that's more of the team, even teams are kind of more like, yeah, all right, what you see is what you get. Rotation, I picked four starters, one reliever. I think we're going to have more overlap on this group. So who is the ace of the all Oatmeal team in 2024?
Chris Bassett.
Yes, it's definitely Chris Bassett. Nice. I love the high two seamer so much. Like I think about that pitch all the time now. Ever since we did that breakdown.
My 11th bold prediction, which didn't make the list, was Johnny Brito out earns the entire Washington Nationals starting rotation. And part of it was Johnny Brito is a high sinker guy.
Ooh.
So.
Okay.
It's just a random interjection.
From the cutting
Merrill
room floor.
Kelly?
Yes, Merrill Kelly was the number two starter I put on the all Oatmeal team.
Nice. We are two for two in lockstep. All right. I'm sure I'll mess this up now. Do you have any hurt guys, currently hurt guys on this list?
No currently hurt guys, and I'll give you a hint for number three. He's been previously brought up on this episode.
On this episode?
Oh, yeah.
Jordan Montgomery.
Yeah.
There you go.
Because these three guys were lumped together in ADP earlier in draft season, and it was like, yeah, they're all kind of the same, and if you get one, great. Don't take all of them maybe on the same team unless it's a super deep league, but I can't really make an argument against any of them.
Did you only do three?
No, I got one more. He goes a little later, but not a lot later. And I think he's similar to the other guys. Like, he's also on a good team. Like, one of the traits of
Marcus Stroman.
Totally fine. Like, I 100% agree. I put his teammate, put Nestor Cortes on there.
Oh, I almost said Nestor Cortes. He almost went 4-for-4.
You're close. Yeah, Marcus Stroman. If we expand here, I'll expand it to five. There are no rules here. It's our team. We can do whatever we want with it. So, yeah.
Oh, but do you have closers? Because that's hard.
I do have one closer on there. And actually, you know what? Marcus Stroman, I don't think Marcus Stroman's Oatmeal. I think Marcus Stroman has a lot of personality. And I think that can just push you right off.
Oh,
not that
hurts
other guys here don't. The other players on this team do have some personality. But maybe that was part of
it. But he has outsized personality.
Yeah. Yeah. Like one closer.
Yeah, close. I guess Raisel Iglesias.
If you allow a closer to be like anywhere in the pool, I would agree. I would say Raisel Iglesias is the Oatmeal closer because he's...
You think he gets drafted too high?
Capital C closer. I'd like him a little more than you do. I did find one outside the top 100 who I think is still better than people give him credit for. And because of untimely meltdowns, he is frequently getting the, ugh, that guy? Like that pinch your nose.
Clay Holmes?
No.
Kenley Jansen?
Getting closer.
Craig Kimbrel?
Craig Kimbrel. I think Craig Kimbrel is your oatmeal closer because he's on a good team.
That's so weird because he's like could be headed to the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, I mean, I think that this is just like, what happens to you as a reliever once
not
you...
Not far off the Hall of Fame trajectory.
You get this old. But I mean, last year, 3.26 ERA, 104 whip, 94 Ks, and 69 innings. Like, that's good. And he goes late enough where when you see all the closer inflation that happens late in draft season, in part because of all the injuries we've had this year, it seems like Kimbrel doesn't get caught up in that as much as other more interesting players do. So I think he's the closer on the all oatmeal team. I think you could still get 25 saves out of Craig Kimbrel at a very reasonable price.
Yeah. Yeah. I just, you know, he doesn't have that good natural command. So like, I always wonder this in his worst years where he's lost it. You know, he's lost the role due to command, but he seems to have righted that ship to some extent. But it always feels a little bit, and then he used to be blowing 98s, 99s, and 100s, and now he's more 96 to 97, so always something to consider. But that makes him more and more of an oatmeal, you know? I mean, that's why I think it's so hard to be oatmeal in the closer role, because it's where you put the young fireballing dude who just has a 100-mile-an-hour fastball. You know, it's like, it's not a good place for oatmeal. Maybe Tanner Scott, you know, is kind of
throws
counts.
Way too hard to be oatmeal.
Yeah, but the command is so bad. I don't know. Yeah, it's really, I think it's hard to be oatmeal here.
I think it's definitely very hard to be oatmeal and be a closer. But oatmeal is a good thing. I hope people understand.
Evan Phillips,
until that late surge, probably could have had a case. Now these last few drafts, he's jumped up. But he would fit because he doesn't have the elite K rate, even though he gets great ratios, gets the job done, doesn't seem to have as many threats to that role as you'd expect him to, especially given the quality of that Dodgers bullpen. Oatmeal, it's a term of endearment around here, just like clown is a term of endearment in my family. It really is. Like, it's a bit of an outlier. I wouldn't just call someone I don't know a clown, but I will call my siblings clowns frequently.
Yeah, and oatmeal is a staple of our diet in the Saras house.
Yeah, that's delicious. It's good for us. We need to go on tomorrow's show. We're going to dig into Eno's main event team, take a look at some of the main event trends, how rosters are built differently, and kind of figure out if there's any takeaways for other leagues. Just, you know, the highest stakes big league that's out there. There's other leagues that are more expensive that don't make some playing.
Look at some bold predictions and make some bold predictions of our own based off of some of those trends, maybe.
Yeah, just try to figure out, like, why do these teams get built differently? So we'll have some bold predictions on Thursday. We'll have some like normal predictions on Friday with Trevor, 1 o'clock Eastern on YouTube for that live stream. So be sure to check that out. If you don't have a subscription to The Athletic, get one at theathletic.com/ratesandbarrels. That is going to do it for this episode of Rates and Barrels. We're back with you on Thursday.
Thanks for listening.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.